نستعينه ونستغفره ونعوذ بالله من شرور أنفسنا وسيئات أعمالنا، من يهده الله فلا مضل له ومن يضلل فلا هادي له، أشهد أن لا إله إلا الله وحده لا شريك له وأشهد أن محمدا عبده ورسوله. يا أيها الذين آمنوا اتقوا الله حق تقاته ولا تموتن إلا وأنتم مسلمون. يا أيها الناس اتقوا ربكم الذي خلقكم من نفس واحدة وخلق منها زوجها وبث منهما رجالا كثيرا ونساء، فاتقوا الله الذي تساءلون به والأرحام، إن الله كان عليكم رقيبا. يا أيها الذين آمنوا اتقوا الله وقولوا قولا سديدا يصلح لكم أعمالكم ويغفر لكم ذنوبكم، ومن يطع الله ورسوله فقد فاز فوزا عظيما. أما بعد، if we look at our كتب الشمائل، if we look at the نسخة of Sheikh Al-Albani, which is the مختصر that we have based our readings on, we will find that the next باب is باب ما جاء في خف رسول الله صلى الله عليه وسلم. But the rest of us, like those of us who have the نسخة of دار الحديث with the تحقيق of سيد عمران, we are going to see that the next باب is باب ما جاء في عيش رسول الله صلى الله عليه وسلم. Similarly, those of us who have the نسخة of دار ابن جوزي, we have Dar ibn Jawzi, you find that the next bab is Babu Maja'a fi Aisha Rasulullah Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam. The same thing, the nuskha of Darul Kutub al-Ilmiya and other nuskh, Darul Bayan, Maktabatul Bayan, we find that all these contain that the next bab should be Aisha Rasulullah Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam. But in our own Mukhtasar, this Aish comes later in the book, in our Mukhtasar. And because we have made the Mukhtasar as our asl, we should follow the Mukhtasar. So when we get to Babu Aisha Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wa sallam, for the rest of us, we return to it. So we read today, inshallah, from Babu Ma Ja'a fi Khuffi Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wa sallam, the chapter about what is reported regarding the khuf of Rasulullah. The khuf is, in English, simply put, leather socks. We all know what socks are. Now imagine what if it is leather. That is khuf. If we read the book Al-Mashu Al-Jawrabain, very common book by Sheikh Jamaluddin Al-Qasimi, it has the tahqiq of two people. Firstly, Sheikh Ahmed Shakir, and then Sheikh Al-Albani rahimahullah. In that book, they told us a lot of resemblance between the khuf and the jawrab. The khuf and the jawrab don't have any difference, except that the khuf is leather and the jawrab is cotton or silk. So if you have cotton or wool, if you have wool or cotton, we have socks. But if it is leather, then you have khuf. So that's why even aside the nusus sahiha sariha that are clear and authentic regarding al-mashu al-jawrabain, ulama make qiyas of khufain upon jawrabain. Despite the fact that there are clear texts that the Prophet والسلام, as he used to wipe over his khuf, he also used to wipe over his jawrab. So the difference between the jawrab, there are aqwal salaf on it, that the difference between the jawrab and the khuf is the fact that the material with which they are made. So the material we are talking about here is leather. And that's why it is called what? Khuf. So it says, Babu ma ja'a fi خوف رسول الله صلى الله عليه وسلم. The ahadith regarding the خوف of رسول الله صلى الله عليه وسلم. So it says عن عبد الله ابن بريدة عن أبيه. It's from the hadith of Abdullah ibn بريدة from his father. أن النجاشي أهدى النبي صلى الله عليه وآله وآله وسلم خفين أسودين ساذجين فلبسهما ثم توضأ ومسح عليهما. أن النجاشي أهدى للنبي صلى الله عليه وآله وسلم خفين أسودين ساذجين فلبسهما ثم توضأ ومسح عليهما صلى الله عليه وآله وسلم. In that hadith it says that أن النجاشي that النجاشي أهدى النبي صلى الله عليه وآله وسلم يعني he gave a gift to the Prophet Muhammad صلى الله عليه وآله وسلم. What is that gift? خفين أسودين ساذجين. خفين, two خف or a pair of خف. أسودين, they are black in color. ساذجين, pure, the black is what? Unmixed, unmixed, purely black خف or pair of خف that النجاشي gave to the Prophet Muhammad صلى الله عليه وسلم. فلبسهما, so the Prophet عليه الصلاة والسلام will wear them. ثم توضأ, and thereafter he will make wudu. ومسح عليهما, and then he will rub them, he will make masah, he will rub over the khuf. That hadith, as we said again, is the hadith of Abdullah ibn Buraydah from his father. That al-Najashi, we know al-Najashi, his name is Asmaha. Al-Najashi is like when you say, is the king, is the name, the title of the king of the Abyssinia. You remember that there was hijrah of the companions of the Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alayhi wa sallam in the early days of Islam to Habasha. And that hijrah, if we read the history of Islam in East Africa, it extended down into Zimbabwe, into Zanzibar. There are graves around those areas that face the first Qibla that the Muslims face. And there are graves that face the second Qibla that Muslims face. And they have been found to be in the direction of some of the oldest masajid in Zanzibar and in those areas in East Africa. So they went down into East Africa. They were not restricted to Abyssinia alone. So the companions went into, far into East Africa. They married there, they had children there and all that. People like Jafar, the elder brother of Ali ibn Abi Talib and others amongst them, stayed there for a long time before they returned to Medina after the Prophet hijrah to Medina alayhi salatu wasalam. So the name of that king who was a Christian at the time was Afhama. But the title of the king at the time was what? Najashi. Just like there is Kisra, there is Tubba. In Yemen, they used to name their own kings Tubba. They say, Qawm Tubba'in. They are from Yemen because they follow one another. So they name themselves Tubba'in. Like Fir'aun in Egypt. There are many of them. It's not just one Fir'aun. So the title of the king in Habasha, in Abyssinia, is what? Al-Najashi. But the Najashi that sent the gift to the Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alayhi wa sallam, his name is what? Asmaha. Because he later accepted Islam. He accepted Islam and he died before the Prophet's death alayhi salatu wa. It was the Prophet who told the rest of the companions that Al-Najashi had died. And he prayed Salatul Janaza in absence for Al-Najashi. That makes us understand that Al-Najashi was a Muslim. The Prophet told us about him alayhi salatu wasalam before he died. So he accepted Islam. So this Najashi loved the Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alayhi wa sallam. He used to send gifts to him. He used to send gifts to the Prophet. From the gift that he sent to the Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa sallam was the woman called what? ماريا القبطي. She was sent to him. Some people say it was sent to him by Mukaukis. And that appears to be most correct. Allahu A'lam. Because Mukaukis was the king of the Copts in Egypt at the time. So the Prophet would accept such gifts, alayhi salatu wasalam. So Najashi sent the gift to the Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alayhi wa sallam. What gift was that? Khuffain. Two hoofs. And these two hoofs, they are what? Aswadain Sazajain. They are purely black hoofs. They were not mixed with any color. Faladisahuma. So the Prophet will wear those hoofs. Alayhi salatu wasalam. Summa tawabba'a wa masaha alayhima. So he will make wudu and he will make mas on the khuf. So this hadith firstly is evidence that a Muslim can accept gifts from Ahlul Kitab. It's evidence that a Muslim can accept gifts from Ahlul Kitab. Many of the scholars who commented on this hadith have mentioned that benefit. Sheikh Al-Albani mentioned it here. And others like Imam Al-Haytami mentioned it. Mullah Ali Qari mentioned it. And this hadith is evidence that a Muslim can accept gift from Ahlul Kitab, non-Muslims, from the people of the Jews and the Christians. So the Prophet alayhi salatu wasalam, labisahuma, he will wear the two pairs, the pair of hoofs, leather socks, summa tawadda'a. Thereafter, he will make wudu wa masaha alayhima, and then he will rub upon the two hoofs. But here, this hadith appears as if he will just wear the hoof and then make wudu, rubbing over it. But the correct thing is that any person wearing a hoof or who wants to wear a hoof, that he will make al-mashu over al-khufayn, if he makes wudu, he must wear them when the hoof, he must wear them when he had performed wudu. As is in the hadith of Mughira bin Shurda, that one day the Prophet ﷺ was making wudu and was wearing his hoof. So he attempted to remove the hoof when the Prophet ﷺ got to the stage of washing his feet. So the Prophet ﷺ said to him, he said, da'ahuma, leave them both. فَإِنِّي أَدْخَلْتُهُمَا طَاهِرَتَيْنِ. He said, leave them both. فَإِنِّي أَدْخَلْتُهُمَا طَاهِرَتَيْنِ, because I wore them طَاهِرَتَيْنِ when I was pure, when the two feet were pure. There is riwayah of, this hadith is in Bukhari and Muslim. There is riwayah in Musnad Imam Ahmad that أَدْخَلْتُهُمَا وَهُمَا طَاهِرَتَانِ. There is difference between the two. He said أَدْخَلْتُهُمَا طاهرتين. أدخلتهما وهما طاهرتان. And they mean two different things. أدخلتهما طاهرتان. The first riwayah, the riwayah of Imam Ahmad and others, it shows that أدخلتهما طاهرتان وهما طاهرتان. I wore them when he wore the first feet. The first feet, he had already washed it from wudu. So he wore the socks. Then he washed the second leg in the wudu and wore the socks. Wahuma tahiratan. This is what it means. Adkhaltuhuma tahiratain. I wore them when the two feet were already clean. Meaning I had finished the wudu. The two legs were already washed before I now wore the socks. This is the difference between the two. So some scholars say yes, what it means is that if you want to wear socks, the ruling applies to socks. So don't say they are talking about hoof. It applies to socks. If you wear a socks, or you want to wear a socks, after which you'll be making mashu on it, or shoe, na'al, or anything that is worn on the feet. Because the most correct opinion, as is said by Sheikh Muhammad ibn Salih al-Uthaymeen in his Majmu' Fatawa, that the most correct opinion is that anything that is worn on the feet, we can make mash on it. Anything that is worn on the feet, you can make mash on it.
It's not restricted to the socks or the hoof or the na'al. Anything that is worn, that this thing is worn on the feet, it can make mas on that thing. So the rule applies to them. But before you can make that mas on it, if you want to make wudu, you must be in the state of wudu. But the two legs, must you be in the state of wudu such that you would have washed the two legs, such that you'll be walking on wahuma tahiratain or wahuma tahiratan. By having to wash one feet, you wear the socks or the shoes or the slipper or the whatever, and then the second leg, and then you wear the second leg. So some of the scholars say either of them is right because they have come from riwayat alaykum as-salam. But some others like Muhammad ibn Salih al-Uthaymeen, Sheikh Muhammad ibn Salih, Muhammad ibn Salih al-Uthaymeen rahimahullah, has the opinion that what is correct is that we should wear the two socks after having washed the two feet. He brought a riwayah from Sunan al-Darqutni that he said, alayhi salatu wasalam, إِذَا تَوَضَّأَ أَحَدُكُمْ أَحَا. After, if any of you makes wudu, after any of you had made his wudu and he intends to wear his socks, he said, oh, this is evidence that we make the wudu first before wearing the socks. But yet some of the scholars say, no, yes, that is wahuma tahiratain. But there is a riwayah that makes us understand that it is also permissible to wear each of the legs, one after the other. So the easiest thing, ikhwani, is that leave the two riwayah as they are. That a person could wear his socks of one feet after washing the feet, or his hoof, or his shoe, or his slippers, wash one feet, wear one. Wash the second one and wear the next one, such that if you need to make wudu, you can now rub on both. It suffices. What we are saying is that the Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam said, "Da'ahuma." He said to Mughira bin Shu'bah radiallahu anhu, "Leave my two socks. I don't need to remove it now, because adkhaltuhuma wa huma tahiratan." Because I wore them when I was pure, meaning that if it were not that he had worn them when he was in a state of wudu already, it would have needed that he removed them, washed them, and wore them again. So he would not be able to make what? Mas. So, but because he had made wudu before wearing them, then it was permissible for him, alayhi salatu wasalam, and the rest of us, to do what? To make mas subsequently when we are making wudu. So this hadith, he says, ثُمَّ تَوَضَّعَ وَمَسَحَ عَلَيْهِمَا. Then the Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa sallam made wudu and then made masru ala al-khufayn, that he rubbed the khufayn. It would have meant that he had made wudu before he wore those two khufs. That now, when he now needed to make wudu again, all he needed to do was what? Masru ala al-khufayn. This issue of rubbing over the khuf, if you read books of Aqidah, you see it in it. You see the on issues of Aqidah, it's a mas'ala fiqhiyya. But if you read books of Aqidah like Sharh al-Sunnah Imam Barbahari, you see it on other books of Aqidah. Even in Tahawiyah, it's there, on mas'ala al-kufayn. Why? Because there are two groups amongst the people of Bid'ah that are known to oppose al-mas'ala al-kufayn. And those are the Shia and the Khawarij. They oppose al-mashu al-khufayn or al-jawrabayn or al-na'alayn. So, but Ahl-Sunnah wal-Jama'ah, our position, like Imam al-Nawawi said, rahimahullah, it's good to read what he said about that mas'ala. Al-Imam al-Nawawi, rahimahullah, said, أَجْمَعَ مَنْ يُؤْتَدُّ بِهِ فِي الْإِجْمَاعِ عَلَى جَوَازِ الْمَسْحِ عَلَى الْخُفَّيْنِ. He said, أَجْمَعَ مَنْ يُؤْتَدُّ في الإجماع من يؤتد به في الإجماع على جواز المسح على الخفين. All those whose comments matter on the issues of إجماع. It means when there are issues of إجماع, there are some people who will say, no, we don't accept. Ulama will say, they go and sit down somewhere. Who are you? Not to accept. So that's why he said, "Ajma'a man yu'taddu bihi fil ijma." Those whose comments matter on the issues of ijma are agreed on the fact that what? Ala jawaz al mashi ala al khuffain. That it is permissible for the Muslim to rub upon his khuf fi safari wal hadari, whether he is on a journey or he is at home. And we know the difference between the two. The person who is on the journey has 3 days and their nights to keep his khuf. And the one who is at home has a whole day and night to keep his khuf. Some of the scholars have asked, when does he start counting? He said, when he makes the wudu and wears the khuf. So that's when he starts counting. So he counts 3 days and three nights if he's on safar, and he counts 24 hours if he's in the house. This is usually useful for women who don't go anywhere and who usually wear socks. They're just making their mouth. Or those Boko-oriented people who are in offices wearing socks here and there. Just making your muscle. Allahu fine. Even you wearing your shoe. We'll come back to that. Your na'al, your sandal. You could make muscle on it. Such that it's not all the time you need to remove your sandals. Because you could make al-masfu and al-na'alain also. So he said, fi safari wal hadar, whether we are on a journey or we are at home. Sawa'un kana li hajatin aw li ghayriha. Whether we have a need to do so, like cold. Ikhwani, if you go to Haramain, especially Medina, during the cold weather, wallahi, you see that this deen is a very easy religion. You will not be able to make wudu. Even when now there is technology that when you are in the ablution room, no matter how cold the weather is, the water that you will get is water that is warm enough for wudu. But the issue is, once you step out from the ablution center, you want to run back. Because that area is warm, relatively. So, for those of us who are wearing socks or khuf or na'al, you could make your mask not having to wash your feet, because the severity of cold is felt more when you are not wearing shoes and you have water on your leg. The water, for as long as the water remains there. Oh, there's another sunnah we could make. After the wudu, you could clean up the water from your body. This is permissible to the Prophet used to do so, alayhi salatu wasalam. He has like a napkin with which he would, you know, dab the water on his skin after wudu. So that will reduce the issues of cold. Because if we read Al-Masfa al-Dawrabain, that is one of the things Imam Jamaluddin al-Qasimi mentioned. Because he lives in a place like Spain in Europe, it is usually severely cold. So many people used to say, no, people should not make Masfa al-Dawrabain. That was one of the reasons why he wrote the book. That no, this Sharia has made provision for us in situations like this. So when Imam al-Nawawi said, sawa'un kana li hajatin, whether we are doing the masru because we have a need to do the masru, aw li ghayriha, or there's no need, we are just there, we just don't want to make wash our feet, we could make al masru ala al jawrabain aw ala al khuffain aw ala al na'alain hatta yajuzu lil mar'ati al mulazamati baytaha. He said even such that it is even permissible for the woman that is just in her house to do al-mashu ala al-jawrabain aw khuffain aw na'alain wa al-zamin alladhi la yamshi, and some other people who are restricted to a particular place. Wa innama ankarathu ash-shi'atu wal-khawarij, those who have rejected it are the Shia and the Khawarij. Wa la yu'tadu bi khilafihim, and they are contradicting the people of Sunnah. It's not considered as a khilaf. It's not considered as a viable difference. It's irrelevant whether they agree or they disagree with the people of Sunnah. There are a lot of benefits around this matter. One of the scholars was explaining why is it that issues like this are even found in the books of Akida. Al-Masf al-Kufayn. Why? He said because it is known with a group of people. So if we know a group of persons or a person who makes inkar of this, we start letting him understand that, look, what you are doing is one of the major things that the Shia or the Khawarij they do. And they do that in opposition to the people of Sunnah. So many of the scholars have spoken about that. This comment by Imam Hassan al-Basri on Al-Masf al-Khufayn is also very important. So we'll read it too. Al-Imam Hassan al-Basri is a tabi, that is from the students of the companions of the Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam. He said, حَدَّثَنِي سَبْعُونَ مِنْ أَصْحَابِ رَسُولِ اللَّهِ صَلَّى اللَّهُ عَلَيْهِ وَسَلَّمَ. I have been told by 70 of the companions of the Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam, أَنَّ رَسُولَ اللَّهِ صَلَّى اللَّهُ عَلَيْهِ وَسَلَّمَ, that the Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam كان يمسح على الخفين, that the Prophet used to make المسح على الخفين, he used to rub on his khuf. Al-Imam Hassan al-Basri mentioned that when Imam Ahmad bin Hanbal was asked about Al-Masf al-Khufayn, this was the answer he gave. Hassan al-Basri said, 70 companions said to me that the Prophet alayhi salatu wasalam used to make Al-Masf al-Khufayn. And in his own evidence in Imam al-Shinkiti rahimahullah, in Adwa al-Bayan, when he was explaining Ya ayyuhal ladhina amanu, the verse in Surah al-Ma'idah, Ayatul Wudu, he said that إِذَا كُمْتُمْ إِلَى الصَّلَاةِ فَاغْسِلُوا وُجُوهَكُمْ وَأَيْدِيَكُمْ إِلَى الْمَرَافِقِ وَامْسَحُوا بِرُؤُوسِكُمْ وَأَرْجُلَكُمْ إِلَى الْكَعْبَيْنِ. This is what we mean. But there's qira'ah of وَأَرْجُلِكُمْ إِلَى الْكَعْبَيْنِ, which would refer to as وَامْسَحُوا. So Imam al-Shinkiti said, رَحِمَهُ اللَّهِ, أَلْمَسْهُ هُنَا عَلَى الْجَوْرَبَيْنِ وَالْخُفَّيْنِ وَالنَّعْلَيْنِ. Said the riwayah is authentic that wamsahu bi ru'usikum wa arjulikum. So mashu bi ru'usikum wa arjulikum, that is make mash of your head, rub your head and your legs. But if you say wamsahu bi ru'usikum wa arjulakum, arjulakum, we go back to ghusl al-wajh. So he said the two are correct. So when you talk about ghusl with respect to the leg, you are talking about what wudu, normal wudu, which includes washing the legs. When you say wamsahu bi ru'usikum wa arjulikum, you are talking about masu ala al-khufayn wa ala al-jawrabayn wa ala al-na'alayn rahimahullah. So it means al-masu itself is also affirmed from the qira'ah of Quran. So masu is established in the Quran, in the sunnah, in aqwal al-salaf. But some of the scholars, one of them said, إن أحاديثه متواترة. The ahadith regarding المسح على الخفين, they are متواتر. وأخشى أن يكون إنكاره كفرا. I think anyone who is opposing it is an act, opposing it is an act of kufr. أخشى أن يكون إنكاره كفرا. I fear that opposing must is rare now, brothers. The reason why I'm giving some emphasis on it is that it is rare to find a brother is wearing a shoe or is wearing a socks, he makes wudu. He had made wudu before wearing the socks or the shoe. He makes wudu, he just rub it. Everybody starts looking at you as if you have done something strange, something that is majma'un alayh and mustanadun bil adilla min al Quran wa sunnah. People start looking at you as if you have done something strange. Rub on your shoe or your slippers, if you like to call it that name. Yes, rub on the slippers. You wore, made wudu before the slippers. You want to make wudu again. You don't need to remove the slippers if you want to. Just rub on it. If you ask me how you rub, just rub as like Ali describes radiallahu anhu. The top of it. Drag your hand above it. That's all. You don't need to start going back or down. Just above it like this. You have rubbed. That's all. And stand up and go. You have made wudu. So this sunnah is from the sunnah of this ummah. And it is from the things with which the Ahlul Sunnah they are recognized. But today it is strange. If you do it now, people start asking you, Ustaz, does it cost you anything to wash your legs? It does not cost me anything. But I'm following the Sunnah of the Messenger. 70 companions say the Prophet used to make mas alayhi salam. So it is important. This hadith says again that أَنَّ النَّجَاشِي أَهَدَ النَّبِيَّ صَلَّى اللَّهُ عَلَيْهِ وَآلِهِ وَسَلَّمَ خُفَّيْنِ أَسْوَدَيْنِ سَازَجَيْنِ فَلَبِسَهُمَا ثُمَّ تَوَضَّأَ وَمَسَحَ عَلَيْهِمَا عَلَيْهِ صَلَاةُ وَسَلَّمَ. The next hadith is the hadith in our own nuskha, hadith 70, 59 in our nuskha. But in others, it will be hadith number 72. In that hadith, it says, "An Abi Ishaq, an al-Sha'bi." For those of us who have the Nuskha of Sheikh al-Albani, it says, "An Abi Ishaq, an al-Sha'bi." It says, "An Abi Ishaq, an al-Sha'bi." "Qala, qala al-Mughira bin Shu'ba, Mughira bin Shu'ba, رضي الله عنه أهدى دئية للنبي صلى الله عليه وآله وسلم خفين فلبسهما أهدى دئية للنبي صلى الله عليه وآله وسلم خفين فلبسهما It says Abu Ishaq. My brothers who read a lot on the science of hadith will think that this is Abu Ishaq As-Sabi'i, Amr ibn Abdullah. Actually, but this is not him. This is Sulaiman ibn Abi Sulaiman al-Shaybani al-Kufi. Al-Imam Abdurrahim ibn Abdurrahim Barpuri clarified that in Tuhfat al-Ahwal. So it is not Abu Ishaq al-Sabi'i, but it is Abu Ishaq al-Shaybani, Sulaiman ibn Abi Sulaiman. And al-Sha'bi, we know al-Imam Amir al-Sha'bi, cool? He reported from Mughira bin Shu'bah radiallahu anhu that ahada dihiyatu linnabi sallallahu alayhi wa alayhi wa sallama khuffayn falabisahuma. It says that dihiya, that is dihiyatu al-kalbi. You remember that there is this companion who looked so much like, in whose form and feature Jibreel used to come to the Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa sallam. Malak Jibreel, angel Jibreel, used to come to the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam, and sometimes in the feature of who? Dihiyatu al-Kalbi. But when he came in the hadith of Ibn Umar and Umar, that baynama nahnu julusun inda rasul, he didn't come in the feature of Dihiyatu al-Kalbi. He came in another feature. So it means that it will not be right to say all the time he comes to the Prophet in the feature of Dihiyatu al-Kalbi. He said he will come to the Prophet sometimes in the feature of Dihiyatul Kalbi. So Dihiyatul Kalbi is a Yamani. He's from Yemen. He gave the Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa sallam ahada dihiyatu linnabi sallallahu alayhi wa alayhi wa sallam khuffain. He gave a gift of a pair of kuf to the Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alayhi wa sallam. Falabisahuma. So the Prophet will wear them. He will wear kuf, the gift from Dihiyatul Kalbi. There are many benefits from this hadith. Like in the first one, it was evidence that the people of the Ahlul Kitab could give gifts to a Muslim and he accepts it. This is also evidence that a student can give his teacher a gift and he accepts it. Yeah, my teacher take, he accepts it. My boss in the office take, I accept. His father take, I accept. Because he said, alayhi salatu wasalam, that ana ala manzilati abawaykum wa adjibukum. It means the father can take a gift from his son, the teacher can take a gift from the student, the boss can take a gift from the subordinate. So Dihiyatul Kalbi gave two khuf, a pair of khuf for the Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa sallam. Falabisahuma, so the Prophet used to wear it, alayhi sallam. وقال إسرائيل cool? But in our own نسخة it is وقال جابر. You know it is مختصر. So وقال إسرائيل, this إسرائيل is the grandchild of Abu Ishaq al-Sabi'i. That was why it was necessary to mention that that Abu Ishaq that we saw in the first riwayah is not al-Sabi'i. Because once we see إسرائيل, we would like to think that Abu Ishaq is the grandfather of Israel, because Israel used to report from his grandfather. He is Israel ibn Yusuf ibn Abi Ishaq al-Sabi. This Israel. So he is the same Israel, but the Abu Ishaq that we saw in the beginning is not his grandfather. So it says Jabir. This Jabir is Jabir ibn Yazid al-Ju'fi. He's called Jabir al-Ju'fi. Many scholars say that he's a weak reporter of hadith. Some even make ittiham of him that he's kazab. that he used to tell lies about hadith. He has some funny ideas, like that Ali radiallahu anhu will come back. Yu'minu bil raj'ah. Raj'ah is that Ali radiallahu anhu, the belief of the Shia that he will come back. He will reincarnate. He believes it. So he's strongly criticized for some of these opinions that he has. Jabir al-Jufri. So he's the one who reported this hadith. It makes us understand that this hadith is what? It's a weak hadith. So وَقَالَ إِسْرَائِيلَ عَنْ جَابِرِ عَنْ عَامِرِ. Amir is the same Amir. Amir ibn Sharahil al-Sha'bi. And it says what? وَجُبَّةً. In addition, that it was not only the Khufayn that Dihya gave to the Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa sallam. It says وَجُبَّةً. Meaning he gave him what? Khufayn and what? Jubba. Jubba is a garment. Clothes. Any nice clothes. Usually it means two clothes, up and down, the rida and the izar. So they are also generally referred to as what? Jubba. Usually wool material. Usually. But it could be of cotton too. So that he gave him also jubba. فَلَبِسَهُمَا حَتَّى تَخَرَّقَ. حتى تخرق. In our nuska you see حتى تخرق مختصر you see تخرق. That shadda is supposed to be on the raw. I think it's خطأ مطبعي. So it is حتى تخرق. لا يدري نبي صلى الله عليه وسلم أذكي هما أم لا. It says the Prophet alayhi salatu wasalam was also given jubba by who? By Dihyatul Kalbi. Falabisahuma. So the Prophet will wear them both. It means two things. Falabisahuma could mean he wore the jubba and the hoof. It could also mean he wore the pair of a hoof. But the correct thing here is that he wear the pair of a hoof. You see the shahid here. The Qareena that makes us say so. فَلَبِسَهُمَا. So the Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa sallam wore the two, the pair of hoof, حَتَّى تَخَرَّقَ, until they got torn. He was wearing it, until they had patches. They got torn. لَا يَدْرِ النَّبِيُّ صَلَّى اللَّهُ عَلَيْهِ وَسَلَّمَ. The Prophet did not know. أَذَكِيُّهُمَا أَمْ لَا. That is, he did not know whether the leather from which the hoof was made was from an animal that was rightly slaughtered or not. But he gave it to him and he wore it, alayhi salam. But this report is weak. This report of Jabir al-Ju'si from Amir is weak. So we're just ready to say the meaning. It is a weak narration from which benefit should not be derived and depended upon. So we cannot say the Prophet got a jubba and khuf from Dihyatul Kalbi, because the aspect of the report that he got a jubba is what? It's weak. But the aspect that he gave him a khuf is what? It's authentic. Don't forget, this bab is talking about what? Babu ma ja'a fi khufi Rasulillah. What has been reported concerning the khuf? It means he had khuf from the khuf that he had, alayhi salatu wasalam. We had the khuf that he was given by who? Al-Najashi. From the khuf that he had was the khuf he was given by who? This year to the Kennedy. And that when he made wudu, he would do what? Al-Mashu al-Khufayn. This is the last hadith on khuf. But there are a lot of ahadith on khuf. If you read that book, Al-Mashu al-Dawrabayn, you find a lot of benefits on it. If you also read Ahkam al-Shita, that is the rulings on rainy season by Sheikh Ali Hassan Abdul Hamid Al-Halabi, you will find benefits too, inshallah. The next bab, inshallah, is Babu ma ja'a fi na'li Rasulillah sallallahu alayhi wa sallam. The chapter on what has been reported about the Na'al of the Prophet. There's one benefit in that chapter that we didn't mention. There's a benefit here that the hoof could be black, and that the one he had was black. The one he was given by Najashi was black. We didn't mention, but it could be black. You know, usually leather is usually made to the there's a process, debug. What's it called? It's usually tanned. So sometimes you have brown. You could have brown and paint it to be black. So the color does not matter. On the shoe of the Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam, the word na'al is generally what we wear on the leg of shoes. And there are different kinds of shoes. But any of the kinds of shoes, the word na'al could be employed. That was what Ibn Hajar said, rahimahullah, in Fathul Bari. The first hadith for us is hadith 60. For the rest of us is hadith 73. An Qatada qala qultu li Anas ibn Malik kayfa kana na'lu Rasulillah sallallahu alayhi wa sallam. Qala lahuma qibalan. An Qatada qala qultu li Anas ibn Malik kayfa kana na'lu Rasulillah sallallahu alayhi wa sallam. قال لهما قبالان قتادة ابن دعامة السدوسي is a tabi'i and he met two companions على القول الصحيح. He met Anas ibn Malik and Abdullah ibn Sarjis. So he's a tabi'i. He took most of his knowledge from Sa'id ibn al-Musayyib, Sayyid al-Tabi'i, the leader of the tabi'un. So Qatada radiallahu anhu rahimahullah was always with Anas ibn Malik. He learned a lot from him too in Basra, because he's Basri too. So he said, "Qultu li Anas ibn Malik." I asked Anas ibn Malik, "Kayfa kana na'lu Rasulillah sallallahu alaihi wasallam?" How was the na'l of the Prophet? How were the shoes? Did the shoes of the Prophet used to look like? How was it? So Qala, Anas ibn Malik reported that Lahuma Qibalan, his shoes had Qibalan, two Qibals. His shoe had two Qibals. The Qibal are two ropes, two straps. They have two straps. If you pick what we will call a slippers now, you see one strap going like this, one strap going like this. Those are two kibalan. He says, Lahuma kibalan. Each of them has what? Two straps. Each of them has two kibas, two straps. Some of the scholars explain it better. They say these straps are connected to what they refer to as shaf. The shaf is called the shoe tongue in English. Tongue. C-H-O-N-G. The tongue is the one that connects the two straps and goes into the shoe. That is in between, the one in between which you keep your toe and the next finger. You know that? That's called shaf. So the shaf connects the kibalan, that is the strap. The shaf, the shoe tongue connects the two straps into the feet of the shoe, or as we like to call it, slippers. So that was how his shoe looked like, alayhi salatu wasalam. But the kibals could come in another way. I saw that after Salatul Asr today, I saw somebody wearing two shoes, wearing a shoe. It came to my mind that this shoe could also fit into this. Because it has two kibals. The kibals are the straps. The straps could come like this and come like this. It will still hold the legs. Even if the shaf is not there, it could cross the top of the feet, such that one strap goes like this, the other one comes, you know, transversely like this. The both of them inside the leg, inside the seat of the shoe. You see, it will still hold the leg. So it could still be, this could still be translated as Lahuma Kibala. Whether there's a chef connecting the two kibals or not, the fact remains that there are two kibals, there are two straps on the shoe. So that could be from the interpretations of kibals, that's Lahuma Kibala. So that hadith is the hadith of Anas ibn Malik. This is evidence that the Tabi'un usually ask how the Prophet used to do something. What cloth does he like best? How does he comb his hair? What shoe does he wear? How does he do that? I don't think Muslims today really have time for that. Many Muslims today can't tell you the name of the mother of the Prophet Muhammad. I tell you this. The Prophet's mother's name, many people can't tell you. Is that when they will have time to start asking you how the Prophet used to wear shoes? If he like letting wear shoes, she doesn't like letting wear shoes. Let him not wear shoes. The salah that he says that they should perform as he performed so that they could enter the Jannah, are they performing it as he performed it? Have they ever asked how the Prophet used to pray? How many times will you see in the ahadith of salah, a tabi will say, you come and tell us how the Prophet used to pray. You were with him, you saw him praying. He say, yes, come and show us how he used to pray. How many times have you had to be asked, times have you had to be asked that question? Somebody see and say, Afa, please, how did the Prophet used to pray? Salah. Come and tell us how he used to pray. But they will tell you that in Iziyah, this is how to pray. In Ashmawi, this is how to pray. But they won't ask you how the Prophet used to pray, alayhi salam. And the prayer that Allah will accept and reward is the prayer that the Prophet used to pray that he taught us, alayhi salam. And that was why the companions were very stern against people when they see them. There are reports from Ibn Mas'ud and Hudhaifah. Hudhaifah ibn Yaman radiallahu anhu saw somebody praying. He asked him, about how long have you been praying like this? He says, for some time. If you pray like this for 40 years, Allah will not accept your prayer. Salat. The Prophet himself saw somebody praying. Al-Hadith Musi Salatah. He saw him praying. He said, no, for salli, fa innaka lam tusalli. Go back and pray because you have not prayed. But the man prayed. Three times. Go back. The man had to complain, oh Prophet, you see what I have done? That is the best I can do. Yes, the Prophet didn't say because it was the best he could do, then it was permissible. He was still telling him that you have not prayed, even if the man had prayed. So it means many people are praying even when they are not praying. They are praying because they are going up, down, doing the showing the features. But they have not prayed the prayer that was taught to them that will be accepted. So when people have great negligence regarding this, is that when they'll be asking you the shoe? Do you understand? Is that when they'll be asking you his prophet's shoe, prophet's cap, prophet's dyeing of his hair? How does he look? No, they are too busy. Mankind is too busy with that. But the Tabi'un used to ask. That's why they are from the Qurun al-Mufaddala. They are from the most virtuous periods. So they will ask about the Prophet's shoes. So that they will make their own shoes like that. That was the reason. Imam Ahmad bin Hanbal, he says, there is no hadith that he has not acted upon. There's no hadith. If the Prophet did one thing, he didn't do it, that it does not exist. So one day he remembered that the said Prophet made hijama, he gave somebody one dinar. He called the person, make hijama, come, make hijama for me. Bloodletting. The person made hijama, he gave him one dinar. So he followed the hadith. There is no hadith he didn't follow. So, and we want to enter the same Jannah, okay? So the next hadith is 74 for the rest of us. So for those of us with the Mukhtasar of Sheikh Al-Albani, it is Hadith 61. What they are following in all of those things they are doing is the same verse of the Quran that لَقَدْ كَانَ لَكُمْ فِي رَسُولِ اللَّهِ أُسْوَةٌ حَسَنَةٌ لِمَنْ كَانَ يَرْجُ اللَّهَ وَالْيَوْمَ الْآخِرَةِ وَذَكَرَ اللَّهَ كَثِيرًا. That's just what they are looking at. فِي رَسُولِ اللَّهِ. All of the things concerning the messenger is the best. That is what we will do. So in the next hadith, it is an Ibn Abbas radiallahu anhuma, kana lina'li rasulillahi sallallahu alayhi wa alihi wa sallama kibalan masniyu shirakuhuma. The rest of us will see musanna. Cook? The two of them, they are correct. In some riwayat, it is masniyu. In some riwayat, it is what? Musanna. كان لنعل رسول الله صلى الله عليه وآله وسلم قبالان مثني شراكهما. The shoe of the Prophet صلى الله عليه وسلم had what? Two straps. مثني شراكهما. That is, their straps are made to be two. It's explaining the meaning of قبالان. So each قبال is شراك. They are the same words. They mean the same thing. They describe the same thing. So his shoes have two straps. The shoes that he wear have two straps. So it may look like a surface as we know it. It may look like the others described. The next hadith is hadith number 62. For those of us with the Mukhtasar of Sheikh Al-Albani, but for the rest of us it will be hadith 75. And that hadith is the hadith of Isa ibn Tahman. He said, Isa ibn Tahman qala akhraja ilayna Anas ibn Malik na'lain jardawain lahuma qibalan. Akhraja ilayna Anas ibn Malik na'lain jardawain لهما قبالان. It says أخرج إلينا أنس بن مالك. أنس بن مالك took out to us. What did he take out to us? نعلين, two sandals or two shoes or two slippers. جردوين يعني لا شعر عليهما. They are so smooth that they don't have hair on it. They are still leather, but the hairs are what? Completely scraped off, completely removed. Jardawain. They don't have any sha'r on it. Lahuma kibalan. And each of them has what? Two straps. See, they describe his shoes have two straps. So the person who goes to a shoemaker say, look, make a shoe for me with two straps. With the intention of following the Messenger, alayhi salatu wasalam, in that, will be rewarded for that. As long as he wears that shoe, he'll be rewarded for wearing his shoes like those of the Messenger alayhi salam. So the hadith continues that qala fahaddathani, yani who is saying here? Isa ibn Tahman. So who is speaking in this qala? Isa ibn Tahman. He says, فَحَدَّثَنِي ثَابِتٌ بَعْدِ ثَابِتُ الْبُنَانِ, one of the students of Imam in Sahaba, Sahabi Hassan Anas ibn Malik, his name is ثابت الْبُنَانِ, said to me later, an Anas, quoting Hanas. Do we get it? فَحَدَّثَنِي ثَابِتٌ بَعْدِ an Anas. Later on, Thabit al-Bunani narrated to me, quoting Anas ibn Malik, أَنَّهُمَا كَانَتَا نَعْلَيْ النَّبِي صلى الله عليه وسلم, that those two, the pairs of shoes that he brought, كَانَتَا, that they were نَعْلَيْ النَّبِي, the shoes of the Prophet صلى الله عليه وسلم. He said in the first riwayah that Anas ibn Malik brought two, a pair of shoes to us. He showed it to us. Later, Thabit al-Bunani said to me, that Anas said to him that those two shoes that he showed to us were the shoes of who? The Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam. So, and those two shoes had what? Two straps. They had kibalan. Lahuma kibalan. This shoe of the Messenger sallallahu alaihi wasallam. Don't be surprised. Why were the companions so careful? They took care of everything that was his, alayhi salam. During his lifetime, Abdullah ibn Mas'ud used to hold his shoes. If the Prophet stands up, he will go and wear him his shoes. Abdullah ibn Mas'ud. If he is removing his shoes and sitting down somewhere, he will pack them and put them under his armpit. Abdullah ibn Mas'ud. He used to do that with his miswak too, his chewing stick. And he used to get him water for wudu. So he'll pour water for him to make wudu. Anas ibn Malik, Abdullah ibn Mas'ud, Abu Abd al-Rahman. He will pour water for the Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa sallam. So his kettles, he is in charge of that. He's in charge of the chewing stick of the Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alayhi wa sallam. You forget that he was going up the tree, the Arak tree, to get chewing stick for the Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa sallam. And the companions saw his leg, they started laughing. Because he was a very, he was not a tall person at all. He was lanky, small in stature, not looking handsome. Radiallahu anhu. So when he climbed the tree, everybody was laughing. Oh, look at that. So the Prophet asked them, who are you laughing at? He said, the leg of Ibn Mas'ud. Radiallahu anhu. The Prophet said, sallallahu alayhi wa sallam, each of those legs is weightier in the sight of Allah than Mount Uhud. That leg you are laughing at. Each of them is heavier in the sight of Allah than Mount Uhud. Those were the people fighting Mushrikun. Those were the people that Allah was giving victory for against the Mushrikun. They were not heavyweights. So don't think that Prophet had companions that were chested, were running around Medina doing hey, like this. Nah. They were people like Ibn Mas'ud, Ibn Abbas, Ibn Umar, Bara ibn Azif, young people. They were not giants fighting everywhere. The Arak tree, somebody showed me the Arak tree in Medina once. And I knew how Ibn Mas'ud was. He wouldn't be taller than an average 13 to 14 years old boy. Because the tree itself, if a grown-up strong person climbs it, will break. If a grown-up strong person climbs, normally, you know, 30, 40-year-old person climbs Arab, the tree will break. But he climbed it, they were looking at his leg up. They were laughing. He was asking him, who are you laughing at? He said, Ibn Mas'ud, look at his leg. That leg you are seeing in the sight of Allah is weightier than Mount Uhud. So what makes a man is not his physical look, but what he is in the sight of Allah. That's why he says, Inna akramakum indallahi. So all of those things combined into their taqwa. So they don't ask how Ibn Mas'ud's wudu would be. How do you think his wudu would be? Maybe Prophet himself. The next time you say, if you want to make wudu, ask Ibn Mas'ud. Because so you will see him making wudu how many times? How many times do you think Ibn Mas'ud will see the Prophet making wudu? He is in charge. And that's why some of the ulama will say that the af'al of the Sahaba fi asri rasul marfu aw lahu hukm ar-raf. What the companions were doing in the times of the companion, on the time of the Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam, it has a hukm as if it was the Prophet himself that did it. When they made taswiyah to sufuf, they were making it and he was looking at them. You know, when he is in salah, Allah permits him to see his back as he sees his front. The Prophet alayhi salam. So in that circumstance, he knows whether they make the wudu properly or not. So he will say to them, لَتُسَوُّنَّ صُفُوفَكُمْ أَوْ لَيُخَلِّفَنَّ اللَّهُ بَيْنَ وُجُوهِكُمْ. So the question is, we have to be asking, looking for asar, how did the companions use to make their sufu? That is how to make sufu. How did Ibn Mas'ud used to make wudu? That is how to make wudu. How did he used to make wudu? How did he used to use his chewing stick? So you see, they had all these virtues, radiallahu anhu. Following the messenger. Some people are following some politicians. And they will tell you that, look, we are in the corridors of power. Because it's following one CPC or PDP, we are in the corridors of power. What about the one following the best of human beings? Radiallahu anhu. So this was the way of the companions, radiallahu anhu. We'll stop on this hadith, inshallah, and we'll continue from that in our next class also on the issues of the Prophet's shoes, alayhi salatu wasalam. So any person who makes a shoe like the shoe of the messenger will get the reward if he intends that. He wants to get the reward for making his shoes to be like those of the Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alayhi wa sallam. Alaykum as-salam wa rahmatullah. No, that's why we are reading Shammai. Yes, if you want to make mashu, they are all the same. They have the same rule in mashu. But the Prophet didn't wear canvas. They didn't tell us here that he wore canvas. So if somebody is wearing canvas, let him not say he's wearing it because Prophet used to wear canvas. How can you say that when the Prophet was not reported in these narrations to have read, to have worn canvas? If you want to do like Prophet, this kibalan, those ones, they will call it slippers. If it is this fiqh we want to take, go and do that type with two straps and with a shoe tongue. Do that and have that intention, you have a reward. But if you do that for canvas, you will not have a basis because you don't have a report to make you understand that he used to wear a canvas. Except if you intend khuf. And khuf is known, it's not canvas. Khuf is known, it's not canvas. There is khuf. It is strange now, many people have not seen khuf before. The khuf is just like socks. It's just like socks, but it is leather. There is one of our shuyukh in Lagos. He took it as a responsibility one time that anywhere you sing with khuf. Anywhere you sing with kuf. Say what I say because people forgot that this is from our sunnah in this ummah. So anywhere he goes, he's wearing it. People ask him, what is this? Say this is kuf. That kuf you've been hearing hadith, this is it. So somebody can do that to make people, these things, people are forgetting that these things are there. Maybe those of us in the tropics, but many people in the cold regions of the world, these things are very beneficial because they seal up the leg and they warm it up. Maybe because of our weather, maybe. But in the cold, why don't we wear things like that? So if he wants khuf, let him do khuf. Canvas is not khuf, and canvas is not the na'al that we have described. But that doesn't mean if he wants to make al-mashu al-na'alain, he wants to rub over his shoes, he cannot rub over canvas. He can rub over canvas. Inshallah. And any type of shoe that he wears. He can rub over bedroom, what you would call bedroom slippers. You made ablution, you wear bedroom slippers, you waka waka the whole card pulley. You now want to make wudu, just rub it. You don't need to remove it and wash your leg again. If you do that, it is also accepted, inshallah. Alaykum. We can pray with it if we want. No, you can remove it if you want to pray. Alexa, don't be surprised that I said you can pray on the slippers or the shoe. You read the hadith here, you see. In fact, there are hadiths where the Prophet said, alayhi salatu salam, that be different from the Jews and the Christians. They don't wear their own shoes to the places of worship. You, when you enter place of worship, wear your shoes. The hadith are authentic. And Sheikh Rabi Al-Madkhali wrote a whole book on that. Wearing shoes to worship places. He brought one asar there that was very interesting. We'll get there. If we read the hadith, we'll mention the fiqh around that. That Abdullah ibn Mas'ud and one of the companions, I think it was Abu Musa al-Ash'ari, we are traveling. So they got to a place they wanted to pray. So Abu Musa was removing his shoes. Ibn Masud was asking, why are you removing your shoes? Abil Wadi al-Muqaddas Tuwa Anta. Why are you removing? Are you in Wadi al-Muqaddas Tuwa? You know in the Quran, Allah said to Musa to remove his shoes in Naka Bil Wadi al-Muqaddas Tuwa. So Ibn Masud was asking Musa, Abil Wadi al-Muqaddas Tuwa Anta. Are you in Wadi al-Muqaddas? Come on, wear your shoes. So he wore his shoes and they prayed together. But the fiqh connected to that regarding our modern day masajid, where they rock like this. We'll explain it, inshallah. When we read the hadith. The hadith, there's a hadith on it here, praying in shoes. Alaykum as-salam.
Based on the hadith of the car. Now, the question is, we insist, because at the point we cut off it, haven't, because this has been brought, couldn't we know? So, sort of then, it's meant that no one should bring this again to teachers, because of the fear of what will come up from you on that. So, learning this today now, and this is.
Yes, the problem is the basis of the teachers being in the school themselves. You know, we are hardly in the times when people teach for the value of teaching. People teach for money now. There's a difference between teaching because it is valuable to teach and teaching so that make I collect my money and go 30 days. Bossa. There's a difference between the two. So this second one has given some of these issues problems. The first one, where when you teach, you are teaching vis-a-vis lie, you finish your book, carry your book and go. If a student gives you billion, if you want to take it, take it. If you take it, you can look for somebody who needs it and say, you need it, take. The Prophet will do that too sometimes. So with that, you don't have problem. The place where you have problem is what we, the problems we have created for ourselves. And it is from the things that people, who, even those who teach and collect money, should be careful. Because he said, alayhi salatu wasalam, اقرأوا القرآن واسألوا الله به فإنه سيأتي على الناس زمان يقرؤون الناس القرآن ويسألون الناس به. Read the Quran and beg Allah for yourself, for your needs. Because the time will come upon the people. People will read the Quran and tell people, give me money. So there are narrations like this. So because of the ulama say, those who will collect the money are those who, they can't do any other thing than that. They don't have alternatives. So maybe this is where we'll find a place for teachers. The only thing they can do to get something to eat is to teach. Because if you say you are a student of knowledge, tolerable ilm, nobody send you. You know, in the early times, the people who learn Islam and teach Islam, the community sees them as the holders of the peace and the stability in the community. Yes, so they take care of them, the way they take care of lecturers now. Because now, communities see lecturers as people who contribute to the development, human development. So what, those people in the masjid telling people, ati ulaw, ati rasul, they are not developing human beings. You don't understand what I'm saying. Because the community, the value, what the community values has changed. Otherwise, those who teach should not have a problem of looking around for what biscuits, packet of biscuits that students will bring for them. No, they should not be looking forward to that. Or 15,000 naira that the professor of school will give them at the end of 30 days. Or 20,000 naira. Or those of them who teach in big, big scholars can get. So, but this problem, as it, we can find justification for what they are doing because, say, they don't have any other thing they can do. That's what some of the scholars have said. Okay, they can do it. Within need. Imam Shinkiti discussed this at length in his tafsir on Surah Al-Hud. There's a verse in Surah Al-Hud when one of the Anbiya was saying, "Kul ma as'alukum ajran in ajriya illa Allah." He discussed it. And they bring many evidences from the Quran. In any case, it is if they now collect the money, in cases like this, if the school now say, okay, don't collect any gifts. Because all is about jawaz, collecting the gifts is jaiz, permissible. So if the school says don't collect gifts, certainly it's very atil fitna, it is giving precedence over the jawaz of collecting the gifts. if the school says don't collect gifts, so that there is no problem because gifts have been collected. We know the kind of problem that have come as a result. If one student bring 1 million naira check for English teacher, the student will pass on. Secondary school teacher, he has never touched 1 million before. See, I beg, I go pass him. So he will be threatened. He will be, his iman will shake. Let me just do this one and make it fast. He will be saying so many things. So school say no gifts. Don't take gifts. So I think it will have a value. It will have a place in the Sharia if the school says the teacher should not take a gift because of fitna. Because faddu zari'a muqaddamun ala jalb al-masalih in the Sharia. To close the door to an evil is giving precedence over, you know, seeking benefits, things that are beneficial. So we say then it is not permissible in that case for the teacher to take the gift. Unless if the school reviews the law. Because another thing could happen that would make them feel that they should review the law. Otherwise, it is still safe to say, based on the qawaid of the Sharia, Allahu A'lam, that the teacher should not receive such gifts. Allahu A'lam. But if it's a teaching of just come, read karatu and go, and then one day the student is coming. 2 weeks ago, a brother told me, he's using one jalopika. So I said to him, brother, change this your car. He said, inshallah, Allah has changed it for me. I said, how? He said, he just tell me. One brother just look at him. He said, look at the jalopika. He said, they sent a jaguar to him. Jaguar. It can happen. And you are driving the jaguar. Because Allah's mercy knows no bounds. Abdurrahman ibn Awf and Uthman ibn Affan were the ones, they used to stand on the household of the Messenger. After his death, they took care of his family. Ibn Awf and Uthman. This is from that too. Many of the people who learned today are selfish. Many of the teachers too are selfish. Sheikh al-Albani rahimahullah, one of the things that was said about him is that if you want to buy something together with him, before you bring money, he has brought the money. And then when you ask him, you say he wants to be different from those teachers who are waiting for their students to be giving them money. He wants to be different. Don't give me money. Instead, take. If you listen to the audio of the visit of Abu Sulaiman al-Ma'ribi to Sheikh al-Albani, he brought a gift from Sheikh Mukbil to Sheikh al-Albani. And he was saying, now, a book, yes. It was a book. It was Sheikh Al-Albani requested from Sheikh Mukbil that he should send the book to him. He should buy the book and send it to him. So Sheikh Mukbil got the book and sent it to Sheikh Al-Albani as a gift. He was rejecting it. He said, why are you rejecting? He said, Al-Matlub la yuhuda. What you ask, if you say, but give me so-so thing, or help me buy so-so thing, you don't give me as a gift. So I said, brother, buy keke for me. Buy the keke, give me. If you go and give me as a gift, I can tell you that I don't want. Because when he said he does not want, Abu Hassan felt somehow. He said, La Yuhuda, are you saying you cannot give it? He said, La Yuhuda. He said, no, you don't give me as a gift. What somebody says, help me buy, you don't come back and say, I dash you. If you now say that, he can say, I don't want. So these people were not waiting to eat from their students. Or even from their friends. And this is the best for them. So that they'll be like Nabi Dawood Alayhi Salaam. Who will eat from what? Who will not eat except from what? From the hands, from his handiwork. What we have said, may Allah make it beneficial to all of us. Subhanakallahumma wa bihamdika ashhadu an la ilaha illa anta astaghfiruka wa atubu ilayk.